Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Psychic's Thoughts. Today, we're going to be discussing the Game Awards. Now, it hasn't happened yet. As of recording, today's like, I think the 5th. So, we've got a lot of gaming news and info coming up through the pipeline by next weekend. If I'm not mistaken, I believe next weekend is the Game Awards. And listen, awards are an interesting thing, right? Some people say they don't matter at all. Some people say they're good for the culture or the art form. Some think they're the most important thing ever. Here's my take on awards in general. I am an artist, right? I'm a filmmaker and a rapper. So awards are a big thing in our industries. Here's the thing. I think awards are important for a couple reasons. One, they allow a centralized, unified place to celebrate the medium and the art form and the artist behind it, regardless of if those said artists are winning an award or are even nominated. It's respecting the art form, right? Unless you watch them, I mean, you don't understand this until you understand that, like, when you're seeing the award show, if it's being broadcast, you'll understand that that's true. Now, regardless of the politics or how you may personally feel about this nominee getting that award and such, right? That's okay, too. But it is a celebration of the medium. The Emmys is a celebration of television. And when you watch them, you are aware of that. The Tonys are the celebration of Broadway and the theatrical world. And you can feel that. The Oscars are a celebration of film. And you can feel that. And the Grammys are a celebration of all music. And you can feel that. So I think that's the importance of it, is the celebration of the medium, the artists. It's one night where the top 1%, sure, are being honored and shown because they pull the most butts in seats. You can't help them. They're the most successful in the form. Right? When you think about a movie or a TV show or an album or something, the people that are gathered in that room are usually the people who you come to mind first. Why wouldn't they be honored? They're at the top of the pinnacle. That doesn't mean there's any respect to the people like me who are underground doing what we're doing. We're just not there yet. There's no problem with that. Why would I be there? I haven't made anything that deserves that I deserve to be there at that caliber. Not yet, at least. So I think that's an important thing to get out of the way first. Because a lot of people say these awards don't matter. And I think that's kind of denigrating the people who are winning them and the people who work so hard to get them. And listen, most people don't go and go to the trouble and to the work and spend their life doing all this shit to get an award. The award is just icing on the cake of your already successful career. Artists, true artists, are fulfilled and rewarded by making quality art for the world and hopefully getting some sort of feedback where they're verified at their belief that it was of quality work. And this is why so many artists burn out and don't continue the path of making their art, because they don't hear the response. Because they work a year or 2 years really hard on this one piece of art, and they work it to the best of their known ability and to what they have at their disposal for resources. They put it out to the world, and not enough people even see it to even give feedback. So it becomes a numbers game, but it shouldn't be. There was this person who had a great quote that said, "If your art hits one person and changes their life or makes their day better, you've done that. You've made one random person on earth better for it." That's an incredible power. And the more people that you're able to do that, if it's 10, if it's 15, if it's 20, how many on and off consistently? And when you look back, right, how many has that grown? Has it become more impactful? Are people going back and replaying? That's for music. But for films, it can be the same way. Films is a little different, but it takes a little more attention. You can't do it as passively, and that's okay. But it's still the same sentiment. I can't tell you guys how many songs and films and small things from artists who I'm like, wow, this is incredible. It's got me grooving, it's got me moving, it's got me feeling, whatever, right? And I'm enjoying it, and I realize that, you know, it's got a good amount of people seeing it, but not a lot. Not as many as I thought it would, right? That's the beauty of the internet, the democratization of information. It's a risky gambit, because then you get a lot of horseshit out there, and a lot of people trying to bring other people down, a lot of hate, a lot of negativity. Absolutely. Right? But it is a tool that enables artists to reach people in ways that we would have never been able to before. And so I think award shows are kind of just a culmination of that industry coming together for one day, one night, to celebrate that. And I think that's okay. I hate when people are like, oh, the Hollywood elites are celebrating themselves, getting them... yeah, making a film is really fucking difficult. And if you haven't made one, shut the fuck up. Because if you're one of those people who are like, oh yeah, it's so easy, oh, all you guys have to do is make a movie, it doesn't matter. Hey, listen, dipshit, we chose to go into this, sure, but this shit is hard as hell. Most people wouldn't survive the film industry for more than, I don't know, 10 days. Let alone years and years. It's one of the most emotionally, mentally, and physically taxing things I think people could do. Now, obviously, it doesn't compare to like a, oh, I don't know, to like a, obviously, to like a soldier or to a doctor or a surgeon, right? I know our place. It's still art. It's still, we're making fun stuff. And to some, it's not as serious, but it is when you're there. It's risky, it's dangerous, people get hurt. Some people die if you're not safe, right? But beyond that, it's physically grueling work. You're working 10 to, well, ideally 12, but in reality, 16-hour days. You're not getting paid enough. It's a massive orchestration of people and of ideas and of complex things to bring one singular story to fruition. And it could take years to finish a movie. And it could take, you know, I mean, they all, you know, scale in size, in range, size, and complexity, right? But, you know, some movies could be $100 million endeavors. Some movies create technology that is used in other fields. Right? Yeah, sure, it's entertainment, but it's also art. It can also provoke thought, and it can teach people things they've never been able to see. It can teach new cultures, new experiences. It can humanize things that don't seem so human. It's a powerful medium, if done correctly. And there's nothing wrong with just popcorn flicks that are just fun to throw on and entertain people. You know? But please never, never disregard how much work goes into a movie, because you would not believe how many people are doing painstaking work to make it as quality as humanly possible with the resources given. And what's also fascinating about all that is a lot of it is pointless details. Shit that you guys won't even see. The amount of small details, adjustments, and tweaks I've made to films of my own or to other films when editing or being on set or helping, it's so inconsequential to the greater scheme of things, but the difference is the subconscious emotional connectivity. So when you're watching it, it's not making you uncomfortable for reasons you can't articulate. Because if it is, then we're losing your engagement and you're not enjoying the movie all of a sudden for reasons you don't understand. There's a lot of complexities to filmmaking. And it's okay if you don't understand it. And it's okay if you don't like movies. I ain't got a problem with that. I mean, we're gonna have a hard time talking to one another, but that's okay. But it's that's for, like, the people who not only dislike movies, but who disrespect the industry. And say that, and just kind of stereotype all filmmakers, everyone, as Hollywood elites. That's not true. Most filmmakers are, like, blue-collar workers, working our ass off 10 to 12 hours, not getting paid enough. The only difference is, instead of maintenance or repair or a more serviceable industry to the needs of Americans, to the necessities, which is vital, obviously, we're making movies. That's the only difference. But the workload, the extreme conditions can be very similar. Not all the time. I'm not saying that we have it as hard as blue-collar workers. I don't think we do. But we do have it hard. It's not easy. And at times we do have it more difficult. It's a scale. Everything is contextual. So let's reduce the stereotypes here, because I hear them, I see them, and I don't know why, I just wanted to address that, because awards are a time to celebrate the art form. And so when people are like, oh yeah, they're gathering in a room to celebrate themselves, yeah, that's the fucking point, dipshit, because they've worked so hard throughout the year. Don't they get a night? Sure, the individual artists get to celebrate throughout the year, when they finish a project, when they release it, when they have a premiere, absolutely. The other thing about art that a lot of people don't get is it's not a 9-to-5. You could be contracted in a way where you're just helping for that time frame if it's not your own work, but if it's your own work or if you're above the line, you're working on it constantly. There's no clock in, clock out. I think that's the other thing a lot of people don't compensate for. You'd be amazed how many people ask me, hey, so do you, like, take a break when you're done with an album? Like, how do you celebrate when you release an album or a movie? Like, I celebrate that night. Maybe that weekend. I give myself a 2 or 3 day weekend of celebration. But I'm already in pre-production on the next project as I'm finalizing the project before it's even released. I've got 2 albums I'm already started working on as I was finishing up Phoenix. And 2 short films as well. Right? And it's a balancing act. Okay, I'm focusing on the album a little more. Okay, I'm focusing on my movie a little more. It's very difficult. And sometimes I fuck up. It's easier to make music. Not that it's easy, but it's easier to produce music quickly, quality music quickly, than it is to produce a quality film. I need more resources. I need more people to pull off a film. And because of COVID, and because of moving, and because of being new to college, that has been harder than ever. But I'm getting back into the groove, and I'm putting people together, and I'm trying to get this short film that I'm really proud of that I've finished writing recently off the ground. I'm aiming to get funding going over the holidays, and I'm aiming to get this movie shot in March, ideally. God willing. So, anyway. That's my whole spiel on awards, and that artists deserve to have a night for their medium, for their industry. And they're also celebrating each other. They're not just celebrating themselves. They're celebrating other people in their respective field. People who they may know, people who they might have worked with before, but people who they may not have had a chance to see or see their work or appreciate their work truly because they've been so damn busy doing their own thing. That's very common as well. So, anyway, be mindful of that. And it's no different for video games. Video games deserve this just as much as anyone else, as any other industry. And so, in the recent years, America has conjured the Video Game Awards. It's kind of incredible how it's kind of just appeared out of nowhere. A lot of people, oh, no, well, see, it's been a thing. No, shut the hell up. I mean, specifically, the Game Awards, as we know it now, by Jeff Keighley and the handful of incredible people behind that, producing all that. I'm telling you, folks, this has not been around that long. I think the first one, truly, like the first one that was broadcasted, that had an impact, was broadcasted on Twitch in like 2016, 2017, maybe 2018, I don't know. So it hasn't been that long compared to the Academy Awards or the Emmys or the Tonys or something like that that are almost hitting their 100-year anniversaries. Right? Video games are a newer medium. It took years to understand that they deserve an award show as well. And it took years to get to that point where there was enough diverse content and people behind the industry to even merit an award show. But here's the thing about the Game Awards that I find interesting. It still doesn't hold the weight or the value of an Academy Award or a Grammy. That's because of a statistical probability. See, you have to understand something. Out of all the awards, the hardest one to win is an Oscar. Statistically, it's just the most difficult. Not just because film is a difficult medium. Television is too, and it's like its cousin. But the amount of Oscars that are given out at any singular award ceremony, and the percentage rate of people who are nominated, all those statistics, I can't just ring them off the top of the head, but I'm telling you, statistically, it's harder to get an Oscar than any other award. Then I think it's Grammy, then Emmy, or I could be flipped. One of those two. And then a Tony, Tony's pretty difficult to get as well, but they're still able, more able, I guess. I don't know. And then everything else. The AMA, the CMA, all these other types of awards in variety. Now, I don't know statistically where the Game Awards falls in line with this. I do not know how hard it is to get an award for video game development. I could imagine it's really fucking difficult after all I've read and researched on how goddamn difficult it is to make a video game. Thank God they have a section for indie games. Because if they didn't, I would really, really be upset by this. Not that I play every game is like, I play as indie. I'd say 20% of what I play may be indie. But the thing is, there needs to be artists that aren't covered by big corporations. Video games are in a weird Wild West point right now because they have a lot of big companies controlling a lot of the industry. And a lot of people could say that for film, but that's not true. With film, the big companies own the top 5%, or maybe 10% of the film television world. That's true. And it's not great, but they control the 10% that's the most popular. But in terms of totality, in terms of projects and industry people, 90% of the film industry is independent. You just don't see that because you don't look for it. And because they don't have the money to compete with Disney. Or to compete with Warner Bros. It's no one's fault. It's just how things work, unfortunately. So if you're a fan of film, I highly encourage you to look in other avenues to find not lower quality. You can find beautifully made films all over, short films too, right? A lot of people are in the short form content era. Now is the time to celebrate independent filmmakers like myself and like others who are making films that are not 90 minutes long, that are not 2 hours long, that are 30 minutes, 15 minutes, 5 minutes, 2 minutes long, whatever the case. You can find them on YouTube. Just type in short film in YouTube. Go to Vimeo. Vimeo is a great source for that too. And there's a handful of other websites and sources and places if you really want to see quality, original film ideas that you've never seen before. Right? It may be derivative, it may pick and take pieces of inspiration. These are younger filmmakers getting their, you know, foot in the door. So there's a lot of inspiration and interpretation, but it's not monotonous. It's quite original. So there are a lot of short films, a lot of student short films that are god awful. I've made a handful of them, so I can speak on this matter. Right? I'm not saying they're all high quality, but there are a lot of high quality short films of all kinds, from student to professional to in between, that you've probably never seen. So I highly recommend you go and see them, because they're like the indie video games. Right? Different pipeline of progress and networking, but still similar. How many underground artists have you listened to? How many? So the problem is that we stay stuck in the cycle of, oh, let's only watch or see the big stuff. And hey, I'm a part of that problem too. Now, I'm a little different. I do listen to underground artists, or I do listen to middle ground artists who are not fully underground but aren't mega popular, right? And I listen to, or I watch all kinds of films, short films and long format, theatrical releases, independent films that are still feature films, but just not as big of an audience reception. I try to diversify my palette. Same with games. I think it's because I'm an underground artist. I understand the struggle, so I want to support when and where I can. And so everything's battling for your time. Video games are more complex and take longer to play than ever. You got TV shows and series and things taking up more time. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot of media. It's a lot of content. But we get a lot of high-quality stuff. You can't say we don't. It's an incredible, incredible industry. And games are a part of that. So let's get into what the Game Awards offer beyond just awards themselves. Okay. So, it's been a day or so since I record that intro segment, but I want to get this out before the Game Awards comes out. So other than the artists and those said artists deserving a day, an evening even, to to highlight their achievements. I think that's perfectly fine, right? So here's the question, though. With all that in mind, why the Game Awards? Why do they matter more? And why do they matter to us as consumers? Well, here's a couple things. I don't think it's very important to most gamers in terms of who gets the award. Now, to some, they do. I'm not saying it's 100% no one cares about them. Obviously, if that was the case, this wouldn't exist. Sure, enough people care about it. I care about it to the extent that if there's a game I really loved, I love seeing it get its flowers, if you will. And since this is the most premier, prestigious, and official way of getting a all-around award, right? You know how, like, in festivals, and depending on the scale of your film and stuff, but for, let's say, a big-budget feature film, it can win all these awards leading up to the Academy Awards, and those are great. There's nothing wrong with those. They are very important, but nothing compares to winning an Oscar. You know what I mean? That's, like, the final point. If you get an Oscar, everything's different, right? I would imagine the same is true for the Game Awards. Now, the Golden Joystick Award is a big one. However, that's less consumer-friendly. That's more on the dev side. And that celebrates the ingenuity and the technological achievements, as well as some of the consumer approaches of a good game design. But that's more of the mechanical design principle. It's kind of like the science and technical side of the Academy Awards, either Oscars and or Emmys, that are shown not on the prime time slot where they air it, shown before or after, sometimes not even televised, right? Where they give all the technical awards, way more technical, way more fine, like, you know, technical achievement in figuring out how to, I don't know, how to better apply water physics simulation in engine in relation to a monitor for the director. You know, if someone figured that out and made it feasible and affordable and way more efficient and useful, well then, my God, that is not easy to do an accurate fluid simulation. And if they find a way to do that, I don't know if it's already been done. I mean, yes, there's great fluid simulation, but I don't know if there's one where you can see it fully rendered and the same time in preview for the director, you know, in reviewing the footage day and date. I don't know. But my point is, if they made something like that, that might warrant an Academy Award of science, of technical achievement. But that's not going to be aired, because why would the consumers care about that, right? I get that. 100%. I understand that. So it's those kinds of things that you got to consider. So in the sense of the awards, I mean, you got all kinds of awards. Last year's was more important to me because Elden Ring was nominated, and that's one of my all-time favorite games. So I was rooting for that one. And the thing is, I ain't got no beef with any other game. Some of them I just don't play, or I haven't had the opportunity to yet. They're on my back catalog, right? They're on my to-do list, but they're gonna take a while to come around to and getting completed. So, like Spider-Man 2. I've heard nothing but good things. I don't have a PlayStation, so I didn't get it day one. Right? I'll get it when it comes to PC, probably next year. Hell, I'll probably get the double feature bundle with both games and the Miles Morales game. I love Spider-Man. It's one of my favorite superheroes. And I've always loved games like that, so I think I'd get a kick out of that game. I just, you know, I could get the first Spider-Man, but I'm seriously so swamped with other games. And I've got a lifetime ahead of me. I'm in no hurry for those games. They're not going anywhere. They're single-player games, right? They're classics, you know. The time that I have to game and the games that pull me in vary, of course. I've been playing Lies of P lately. My buddy C's, he got me into it. I tried it. I was interested into it before it came out. Because any Soulsborne like game, I'm like, okay, you got my attention. I'm a sucker for that type of genre of gameplay. No one does it better than FromSoft, and I don't think anything will top Elden Ring, because Elden Ring is a magnum opus of theirs. It's a combination of all of their best mechanics, thoughts, and so much new original concepts. It is the most rich, most vibrant, most diverse game I think I've ever played. And its gameplay mechanics hold true. It does not bog you down with things that you don't need to do. And I very, very much so appreciate that, because so many games do. However, Lies of P is really fun. I'm really liking its mechanics. Great parrying, great combat, great sword combat, really unique design. It's hitting on all cylinders, right? The Surge, that was a fun one. It felt a little off, but it was good. It was its own thing, especially the first one. I never played the second one, so I can't speak on that one. There's a lot of great games out there. Mortal Shell, not a great example of that. I liked the idea, but it just was too sluggish. So there's a lot of good games out there. Hard to choose from. And there's a bunch of different genres and stuff at the Game Awards. But you know, we all look at what like the best game is. And this time, almost all of them are party exclusive. I have a problem with this. This is my only big gripe with the Game Awards and how it divvies out awards. That and the whole thing, like, oh, you vote on your favorite game, that only influences like 20% of it. Which is still impactful. I guess that's more influence than other things, but just know, if you're really into it, I think it's still worth it. Because it could be that. I mean, 20% is still a good amount. If it's on the line, but the bulk of it is decided by, officials. Which is fine. They have a metric they can keep up with. So it's okay that 20% of it is fan consideration. I think that's a healthy ratio. I wish it was a little higher. I wish it was like 30 to 40%, but I get it. Because you want to safeguard it. You don't want it. If this is the most prestigious award, you don't want it to be. If someone hates the game and review bombs and everybody really dislikes this one game and doesn't particularly like another, or someone who never played him, you could just vote. You just have to sign up with an account. You could just vote. So I get that it's only 20% to safeguard a threshold, so the actual award doesn't go to somebody just because the fans are being dickheads, because as we know, gamers can be trolls online. It's a problem. So yeah. That's my thoughts on the matter. So, taking from that, I think that the biggest thing that I'm excited about when it comes to Game Awards are the trailers, the announcements, the info that we get towards the games that we've been waiting to hear from. I think that's what most people get excited for because, yeah, it's a time for celebrating games, and so because of that, we're going to see a lot more of that. So let's get into it. Alrighty, so I started this episode a few days ago, and it never occurred to me that the Game Awards is tonight. It's taken a few days. I've been battling with a cold. I recorded this episode, more of it yesterday, and I started getting a headache, and I was like, I gotta lay down here. So, there's not much else to say. I'll have a post-Game Awards thing afterwards, but I wanted to mostly say that it's not really about the awards to me. Now, I wanted to mention that I'm not trying to devalue the artists and the people who work very hard to get that award. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I'm just saying, I think for a lot of us, I think it's safe to assume we're here, and it's weird because this doesn't work like other mediums, right? Oscars and all of them, they don't show trailers, really. I mean, they will, but, not as many. They don't show off what's coming next. You see, the Game Awards is an interesting thing because it's also a conference to show off what's coming. Now, usually, more times than not, you're going to see trailers from the developers or the titles that are already being awarded, highlighting what's next, right? Because we have Gamescom, and we have the Summer Games Fest, and we have all these other festivals and events that show off new games coming in the future. Please, please, ignore my roommate. He's losing his shit in Fortnite with his friends. The Lego one. It's actually not even Fortnite. It's just building. It's like Minecraft. It's kind of cool. I'm going to have to give it a shot. So, anyway, it's not Battle Royale. Isn't that wild? Fortnite, not having a Battle Royale mode. That's crazy. Anyway, so I realized the Game Awards are tonight. And so I wanted to finish up this podcast and get it out like it fucking matters. Oops. My mic fell out. Okay, so like that matters now. Ideally, this was supposed to come out a few days ago, but I got a little cold. I was feeling under the weather, and life happens. So I apologize. But anyway, but it's all about what could come, what's being shown off, what will we see towards the games that we've loved, whether or not they're being nominated. But most of the time, I'd say like 80% of them are by the developers and the ones being nominated. But that's not just like the best games. I think it's Baldur's Gate, Spider-Man 2, Zelda, and Mario. So Nintendo has two, which I think is outrageous. And there's a handful of others. I'm forgetting some others. I've played some of them. I haven't played most of them, I'll be honest. Alan Wake 2 is one of them. Actually, I haven't played any of those yet, come to think of it. But I think there's one or two that I've played. I wish Remnant 2 was up there. I wish Diablo 4 was up there. Diablo is in like the RPG category. I think Diablo 4 was a solid game. What else? A couple others. But my point is, it's not just the best games nominated. Even like other devs that are nominated in other categories, they might still show off stuff of their own. But for the most part, you know, or even if they're not currently being nominated, ones that have been in the gambit, right? Like Elden Ring comes to mind. Elden Ring won Game of the Year last year, and it deserved it. And that's why last year was more exciting for me, because I was just rooting for that game all the way through. Now, I have nothing against God of War Ragnarok, and I understand that that's a very solid contender. But here's the difference. People on PlayStation can play God of War Ragnarok. People on Xbox, PlayStation, and PC can play Elden Ring. And that's my only big gripe with the awards. They need to have a category that is best game of the year for console exclusive. Or for first party game of the year. Right? Now you might think, well, causes issues. I don't think it does. I mean, look at the Golden Globes. I mean, people have a problem with the Golden Globes, but I do think they do one thing great. And I think they need to draw these lines a little more clearly or add some more subcategories, but rule of thumb in film and television and theatrics in general is there's two main categories, two main genres. And then everything can technically fall under that, depending on these two. Comedy and drama, right? And a lot can fall under either one, and it is kind of subjective, so it gets a little hairy. But the point is that when something wins, it's not winning best out of everything. It's winning best comedy or best drama. If the Academy Awards did that, that would mean that Everything Everywhere All at Once would win. It's kind of a mix of both. It's almost a perfect split down the middle. It'll make you cry. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you... I think it was one of the better pictures last year, and I'm happy it won because it was an incredible film and very beautiful and really moved me and hit me at a time when I needed to see it. So kudos to that film. It's fucking phenomenal. I highly recommend it. But I'm just saying that film could have been, and it was at the Golden Globes. I think it won Best Comedy, even though it's not a comedy. But it won under that category. And then I think Banshees of Inisherin, or whatever the fuck that name is. If I'm not mistaken, I think that one, unless I'm getting my years mixed up, that one drama. But regardless, my point is that the Game Awards, this isn't just like a, oh, this would be nice. Like, for the Academy Awards, I'm okay with there being a singular Best Picture, because we have the Golden Globes, which are like second close to the Academy, and it's combining film and television, and it's giving more genres, so it's a little more diverse. So I actually like what the Golden Globes does, so I don't really need to see that in the Academy Awards. It'd be cool, but I'm not, like, in a hurry for that, you know? But for the Game Awards, it's necessary. Because it's not just like a, oh, this is a different genre. It's a restriction of access to the people to play it. That's a huge fucking blockade. That makes it very difficult to know if it's the Game of the Year. How the fuck could God of War, Ragnarok, be Game of the Year if only 40% of the gaming player base can play it? Or 60? Or 70? It's not, you know, whether or not they choose to, they have to have the means to, if that makes sense. But I also don't want to take its flowers away, because I understand it's a great game. And it deserves to be at that caliber. So the balancing act as well, if we make it first party exclusive, does it have that weight? And then also, like, what if 1 year a company's lacking in first party exclusives? Yeah, but there's three main companies. So, I mean, and then that also counts for VR. VR, I think, will have its own section if it doesn't already. You don't even have to make it first party in terms of company. You can make it in terms of platform. So PC exclusives can also be lopped in there. When you have PC exclusives, Xbox exclusives, PlayStation exclusives, Nintendo exclusives, and VR exclusives, that's enough. That's enough of a fight. Now, if they did that this year, three, if not four, of the games that are being nominated for Best Game of the Year would be out of that category. I think that's kind of fair. I think the games that are nominated for the overall Best Game of the Year has to be able to be played on more than one or two platforms. It's not fair. I just don't see how that's fair. Yeah, Spider-Man 2 might be the Best Game of the Year. How the fuck is that fair if most people can play that, but if a lot of people can't, whether because they don't have a new PlayStation or because they're not on PlayStation? I don't have a PlayStation. I'd love to have one. I don't need one. I have a PC. I will play Spider-Man 2 next year, but I have to wait next year, so I can't even say if it's Game of the Year. It looks fun as hell, and I'm not against it winning. I have no qualms if it does. I'm just saying it seems like it would be more fair. Which is also why I was more okay with Elden Ring winning, because anyone could go and play that game before or after the Game Awards. Because there's a bunch of people who will probably want to try the game if they hear it's the best game of the year, if it wins the most prestigious award, right? So it's only fair for that game to be more accessible. Because when it's party exclusive and when it's locked to one platform, there's a lot of people who just will not have the ability to play the best game of the year. And to me, that doesn't seem like that could be the best game of the year if not everyone could at least have the access to play it. But then again, if that is the case, then we're running into a bigger issue because of corporate consolidation and IP allocation. We have this massive problem where some of the best games, the best devs, will be first party. Activision Blizzard was just purchased by Microsoft. Some of those games in the future will be first party. I don't think Diablo will be, I don't think COD will be, but let's say they were, hypothetically. Once again, I really don't think they will be. There's nothing that suggests they will be, and it doesn't make sense if they are. But, and they're not, but let's just say, hypothetically, for the sake of argument, they are. And let's say, or Diablo 5 for sake of argument. And let's say Diablo 5 was really good. Things were turned around. And it was only on Xbox and PC. It's a little better because PC is a huge demographic as well, but it's still, that's cutting out all PlayStation players. And Nintendo. I don't think that's fair. So I would say, yeah, that might be a runner-up. And maybe should win in Best RPG, or Best Action RPG, if that's even a category, but Best RPG, maybe, and then also be nominee for Best Party Exclusive, or First Party Console Exclusive, or however it's named, game. Right? You can even divide it in two, so it's not Best Game of the Year, and then Best First, you could say Best Third Party Game, and then Best First Party Game. First Party means it's exclusive to that first party, the self-publishing, self-developing in-house, right? Or by a subsidiary company under that parent company. And then third-party means available on multiple platforms. Call of Duty is a third-party game. You can play it on your PlayStation, you can play it on Xbox, you can play it on PC, right? Spider-Man 2 is a first-party game. You can only play it on PlayStation 5 and nothing else. So that's my point. We should divide it best award. Because if that were the case, last year God of War, Ragnarok, and Elden Ring would have won. And as I know someone say, well, that kind of takes away. But it doesn't, because it makes it fair. Because God of War beat every other first-party exclusive, and Elden Ring beat every other third-party game. And that's still a fuck ton of competition. Right? So that's my take on that. But the bigger reason why we get excited for the Game Awards is what's to come. The trailers, the announcement, the general hype, DLCs, expansions. We will most likely get an Elden Ring DLC trailer or some more info, God willing. That would be tonight. That would be lovely. I don't know if it'll happen, but that would be incredible if by tomorrow I could say, oh, fuck, we know when it's coming out. We have a trailer that we can foam at the mouth over for my Elden Ring fans. Or it's no coincidence that GTA 6 just dropped their first trailer a couple days ago. It was awesome. It's a dope trailer. Doesn't show much, but it shows just enough. We're going back to Vice City, folks. It looks bigger than ever. The scale is big. Rockstar looks like they're really paying attention to how they're writing this out. It looks like it's going to be a fun time. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's been a decade in the making, so any time now, right? But of any time throughout the year, why not drop it during the Summer Games Fest? Why not drop it then, here? The Game Awards, it's a prestigious time. You've got more people tuning in and being aware of that. The publicity and the money going behind that is a bigger machine than the Summer Games Fest, which is also by the same people who are doing the Game Awards. Because E3 is dead and gone. I've talked about this before. It's actually kind of sad. For us gamers, it used to be like the flagship convention of all games being under one roof. And I will forever miss those days where Bethesda, EA, Ubisoft, Activision, Blizzard, Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, all of them under one roof for 4 to 5 days or so, showing off their latest games, technology, and what's to come. We still had Gamescom, and that showed off a little bit, but that was more from the technological side. That's more internal. It still showed some other stuff, but it was mostly internal. So, it was really cool. And, you know, it just didn't get the turnout. It started to become more divided as companies pulled out of it and started doing their own thing. Because they realized with the power of the internet, that's where the most viewerships are. So just curate your own. Have panels under your own stuff. Why wait? Why pay an extraordinary amount of money for just a small booth? At the time it made sense, but now it's different. But I don't like that as much. I don't like Sony's State of Play and Xbox's whatever the hell they call it, and Nintendo Direct. Like, I like those, don't get me wrong. I think they're cool to have. But in conjunction with the big mecca of gaming coming together, There is a communal aspect. Gaming is a social art form. It is something that is enjoyed and experienced among peers. I mean, you can hear my roommate, possibly, in the background losing his damn mind with his friends on Fortnite. It's a social experience. And it needs to be... And I think when the industry can accept that and allow that to be the format of how they present the next year of gaming and celebrate what has been gaming under one roof just for a few days in the year, I think that's okay. And I think companies should be able to put their differences aside because it benefits them. It's not like they're losing money. People will still watch them. So... And it actually forces them to curate a more concentrated thing. And it's less expectation to have more. So, because if, let's say, they all get panels, right? And especially the big ones, Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo, the big hitters. But their panels are only like an hour long. Maybe they get a second day. Maybe they get 2 hour long panel. They're not pushing 3 hours. But now, with their own panels, we're talking 2 hours the first day, 3 hours the next, however many fucking hours they want it to be. That's a lot of content. And when it's just them, it's just them. They can't show much else. And so it makes it really lackluster when we're watching these previews. But let's be honest with ourselves. You go back and you look at E3 compared to a Sony State of Play or compared to a Microsoft or Nintendo, what they're doing nowadays in 2023. And if you look at it, you're like, well, if you pluck the two or three big ones out of each of those companies and then sprinkle one or two of the smaller ones, you know, say five games that are noteworthy, two or three big ones, two or three small ones, five to six for each company, and that would take up an hour mixed with some other announcements, mixed with some theatrics, that would take up an hour slot. And then they might do a quick little reel, and then they could say, hey, go check us out for our exclusive after show on our YouTube channel, or whatever. And that's an extra hour where they go in depth and talk about some of the other smaller games that they didn't get a chance to have the premiere debut. That's how it used to be. And the reason why that felt more significant is it was a more curated, very focused, high caliber, and there wasn't much disappointment because all of them were big hitters, because they were only showing three or four games. But now they show like 15 to 30 fucking games, and 3 to 5 of them are still big. The ratio, the general, like the big hitters, the mainstream ones, are actually still the same, if not more. The only difference is it's one company filling the rest of the slate, so it becomes lackluster because the entire presentation is bogged down. Does that make sense? Listen, it's all theatrics at the end of the day. It matters, but it's theatrics, it's marketing. But it doesn't have to just be some corporate shilling marketing, which is what it's becoming. Now, I'm excluding the period of COVID. People had to do it differently. That's okay. But past that, now that we're out of that phase, right? And that was only 2 years, and that sucked. But, you know, it is what it is. That's just everything had to convert to that for a while. And honestly, there's some benefits that came out of that. Obviously, not the people getting sick and dying, but the benefit of what COVID did, I think, in the American economy is it allowed more hybrid usage. It promoted the use of a healthier internet. Now, of course, there's always a counter side to it, but my point is more people know how to use the internet. More people are at least aware of trying to be internet safe. And it allows and affords people who may not have the opportunity otherwise to be engaged in more ways than ever before. I have no problem with that. I don't think every job requires you to have to be there 9 to 5. A lot of jobs are... That's unnecessary. And so for people who are parents or people who might have illnesses or people who are looking after someone else, to have the ability to have a hybrid job or a remote job and still to be able to do their job and to take care of their loved ones, I think that's a great opportunity. And everyone, you know, some people are like, oh, well, what if they slack off? Well, people slack off while they're there in person. It's no different. You don't have to have someone monitoring, hovering over your shoulder. And if that's the case, then that's on the individual. And listen, if their work or their product doesn't turn out the way that they promised it would because they're slacking off, that's on them. And they may get fired, or they may not get their earnings, or whatever the case may be. I'm not responsible for that. I'm more looking at the greater good of how it affects other people. School, for example, was forever changed because of this. High school, specifically. College has always had this hybrid online thing since I've started. So for the past 4 years, right? I'm a month away from, I'm less than, I'm 2 weeks away from finishing college. Jeez. So, right, we turned our assignments online. We had syllabi online. I mean, it was through Canvas, right? Very cool system. Makes it really easy. Not that the work was easy, but the uploading process, you don't have to hand in papers. You know, it's crazy that to think back in like high school, middle school, you didn't know if you were going to get homework that week. Whereas in college, you know, you're given in syllabi and you'll know for the most part. There might be some pop quiz, there might be some extra things, but for the most part, you know 90% of what you have for the entire fucking semester. So if you just felt the urge to get it all done in the course of a weekend, and you somehow managed to do that, first of all, impressive. Second of all, you could. Now, sometimes the professors wouldn't allow you to upload that said stuff prematurely. But sometimes they would. It just depends. But regardless, the ease of communication, the ease of access. Now, I will say, I don't think learning online for a lot of things is beneficial. I do think being in class helps. I think people who need accommodations in class should always get them. Right? People with ADHD, people with autism, people with dyslexia, people with physical disabilities, other ailments, people with severe anxiety disorder, or panic disorder, or narcolepsy. I think people like that should always be accommodated physically or virtually in any circumstance. Work, at home. It's just basic human rights. It's treating someone decently, regardless of their ailments. You treat them equally, and you accommodate them. You don't say, oh, try to get up to my level. They can't. They don't have the same fucking physical programming as you. It's impossible for them to. That would be like asking somebody with no legs to just get up and walk up those flight of stairs. You would never do that. It's those invisible illnesses where people feel like they have more leeway because they don't see it. Right? So I think it's very important to accommodate people. And I think Zoom and online learning can do that in a lot of ways and can help ease scheduling and do a lot with accommodations. But I also think having hands-on and being in class and learning that way is also very beneficial, especially depending on what you're doing. I'm in film. It's real important when you're learning film to be making movies. And when you can't and you have to do it virtually, I think it hinders the educational experience dramatically. So, basic lectures is okay to be online, I guess. But even basic lectures in person were a little more engaging. When you're sitting there in person listening to a professor who knows what they're doing, yeah, sure, it's sometimes boring. Yeah, sure, sometimes you wish you could be at home gaming. But you paid and you worked your way to be here. And you're learning something that most people won't have the privilege to learn. At least that's how I felt in my classes most of the time. So I really try to take advantage of it. But my point is that the accommodation of online engagement is important to note because it brought the downfall of what we knew as E3, this massive conference in person that was still broadcasted on YouTube and Twitch and all these things. But it was like the Mecca. E3 was great. I miss it. I miss it dearly for what it used to be. It was simpler times in so many ways. Plus, I was younger, but a bunch of companies, a bunch of video game developers, and fans. The fans were there. They got to cheer on their favorite game. And so that really helped, and I think it helps the developers stay grounded. Listen, there's a big, big disconnect when you're an artist. It happens often. You make the art for yourself, but you're also making it for your audience, especially as you build an audience. Speaking from experience, this is difficult to do in general. And it's more difficult the more you become isolated. The less interaction you have with the people who enjoy your content, the harder it is to gauge if you're doing something that is just purely out of self-pleasure. There's no better way I could phrase that. Don't think like that, you dirty whore. So, yeah. That's it. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, sometimes I make a song or a movie that that's something I would be proud of making, that I enjoy, and that I would love to watch or listen to, first and foremost. And then I also consider, well, will my fans enjoy this? Or will they look at me like, what the fuck are you doing, dog? We're giving you our time. We're giving you our money. We're giving you our energy. And you're you're wasting it. So I never want to do that either. Right? But I'm also not beholden to my fans. I'm beholden to myself and what I feel is right. That's all. So, yeah, I think it's one of those things that's a tough balance. And I think it's even more tough for game devs because that, like we've said many times here, me and my multiple personalities, I guess, I don't know. Like I've said multiple times before on this podcast channel, video games are an interactive media, and it takes player agency, and because it's so complex, it takes player feedback, and it is a push and pull, and it's very important to have good communication between the devs and the players, and it needs to be healthy, and it needs to be respectful, and it's not always, and it's unfortunate, but in general it is, and it's one of those things that I think is crucial. Player feedback. But it's not just all about the criticism and what you could do better. These poor devs deserve to feel and see firsthand in person the love and the support and the community and the fans who love their games. Because when you're a game dev, not many people know your name. Right? Unless you're like Todd Howard or, you know, like someone like that. But other than that, unless you build more of your brand on yourself and your name as well as what you've made. But for the most part, most of the hardworking men and women who, you know, spend hours and spend their entire life force to making the games we love to play for almost equal amount of hours that they spent to make it, they don't get that recognition. And that's okay. It's not always going to be the case. But not only that, they don't get to feel the love from the people who appreciate what they've made. And it's hard to. It's cold. It's static sometimes. It's very difficult online. It can be done, and it's great that having these resources online allow you to if you can't otherwise. But what E3 afforded so many game devs is the ability to see their fans and to interface with them in person. Now, just because there's no E3 doesn't mean this doesn't happen. We've got the Gamescom. We actually have more now than ever. It's just split up and scattered and elongated. So we have more gaming festivals and conferences and things like that than ever before. As a consumer, personally, it fatigues me. I enjoy it. It gets me excited. I do kind of like how it's spread out. So there's always a little more to look forward to throughout the year. Right? So it's not like one big event or two big events, and then you're like, okay, I gotta wait a whole year. You know, it is nice for that, but honestly, the energy and the quality is different. And it was also because I was a kid, but there was something so special about E3. It really was, and kind of had to be around, be a kid at that time when E3 was peak. Like 2014 E3 was one of my favorite ones. Right? It was still going strong then. You know, I think between 2004 to 2014, that 10-year span was its strongest, to be honest with you. But like 2008 to 2014 is when I started tuning in more and more every year. 2014 was like peak. Not only did they show off a bunch of cool games and teased a bunch of stuff, and I just realized the theatrics of it was fun and the energy was just so, so engrossing. Also showed off one of my favorite games, Rainbow Six Siege. I lost my shit. My poor parents couldn't get me to shut the fuck up about it for like weeks. I'm like, guys, Rainbow Six Siege. And they're like, okay, cool. Nah, they listened. They got it for me for Christmas when I was December 1st, 2015. Oh shit, yeah. So Rainbow just hit its like 8-year or 9-year, eight-year anniversary. So that's pretty dope. Anyway, December 1st, special day. So anyway, that's it was a unique time. And so the Game Awards kind of brings that in, but it's not really, I mean, you know, E3 is about showing off stuff. Game Awards is an award show through and through. It is a 90-minute cut-and-dry award show. There's not much else to it, but nonetheless, it still carries a lot of that energy and charisma, and it's starting to take the shape of what it's always supposed to have been. It used to be relegated, it's another award show, like People's Choice or Nickelodeon or whatever, and it's slowly climbing the ranks because more people are realizing how influential, powerful, and meaningful games are, not just financially, but artistically. So it's climbing the ranks. It's going to celebrate its 10-year anniversary tonight, so I'm pretty excited. I'm putting on my bow tie. I'll be watching it. You can catch me on Twitch watching it. I'm kidding. I have to edit a film, and I have to write my other film, and I have to play video games with my friends, and then I will tune in and watch this when and where I can. could you imagine? I used to be like that. I'd love to be like a full-time YouTuber, Twitch streamer. That'd be fun. Sorta. No, actually, that's a lot of work. That's a lot more work than people realize. I do it part-time to promote my content, and it's a ton of work. But then again, I'm also... like, it's different if you're a full-time... and I'm not taking away from this. I tried to be a full-time Twitch streamer for like a year when I was 18. It was really fun. And it was very difficult. So I'm not taking away from this. I understand how complicated this actually is, but... I don't like that. I don't like the grind and just hoping to get a few more views. I don't particularly like doing that with streams. I don't like looking at it and be like, oh, I wish 12 more people could stream me, or 100 more, or 1,000 more, or whatever. I don't think it's a healthy mindset. So I really try not to look at that stuff. The followers, the numbers, the streams. Yeah, I mean, it's important. It's a good way to gauge your growth, of course. Especially when you're being paid by it. Obviously, it's important for those who have made it a full-time career, but I think we get too in our heads about that when we see that, and we're like, oh, we're not good enough, or we're not doing a good job. No, we are. We just haven't hit our stride yet, per se. Doesn't speak on the quality of what you made. It just speaks on the demographics of where you're throwing it. And you may not know how to aim it any better. So, it is what it is, but I'm excited. I'm excited for what the Game Awards has been. I'm excited for the culture of video games. It's always exciting. You know, a lot of people want to spell doom and gloom. Oh, the gaming industry will afford everybody. Okay, first off, fuckers, we're getting older. You know, it's not made for us anymore. I mean, it is still for me, because I'm only 23. So I'm still in the dead center target demographic. Like, the average target demographic for gamers is between the ages of 10 and 12-ish to start. Obviously, they make games for smaller and younger people as well, but this is like when the brain is developing enough to get them addicted. So 10 to 12 is the starting point to 35. It's not that they don't make video games that 60, 70-year-olds can play and enjoy. It's just that that's the average, that's the general average age range of the most gamers on Earth. So I've got another 12 years in this motherfucker before I start spinning out of the market demographic. But yeah, I'm getting older. Some of the things that used to be special, or some of the things that I used to understand for gaming, has changed. I'm changing as well. I'm learning as it goes. I love growing with the thing. Because, you know, playing as many games and being around every year a little longer, it does make you more aware of the patterns, right? I think we all understand that with everything. That's what age is. You learn as you grow older, and as you do, and I know there's 30-year-olds and there's 40-year-olds looking at me like, fucker, you're still young. I know that. But I'm just saying, in general, compared to a decade ago when I first started getting into this, right? What I was just talking about with the Rainbow Six and like one of my favorite E3s was almost directly 10 years ago. About 9.5 years ago. That's a good amount of time. Things have changed, right? Good and bad. Lots of good in the gaming industry has come out of it. Lots of bad has come out of it. That's what happens. That's life. It's a balance. It's an ebb and flow. And every generation, someone thinks the world's going to end, and that everything that we love and hold dear is coming crumbling, crashing down. And every year, we're proving, nope, we're just going to keep on ticking. I mean, yeah, there are more existential threats to our well-being than ever before, so it is something we need to address, but I think it can be done. My whole thing is that with gaming, it's one of those things that we've seen a lot of good and a lot of bad come out of it, and I think a lot of people find it easier to point out the negative. Oh, well, these award shows are all just corporate, blah, blah, blah. Shut the fuck up. First of all, kids like it, so
Who gives a shit? Let the kids have fun. Second, it doesn't matter. It's okay. You don't have to watch it. You don't have to love it. There's nothing wrong with it. Just respect that some people enjoy it. Respect that people are coming together to enjoy their favorite games. And, a lot of us are just hoping we'll see some trailers and announcements towards the games we've already loved, whether that they be on the stage this evening for whatever Game Awards may be going on, and or recent memory have been on stage. Those are always fun to see. New trailers, new announcements, new surprises, all those kinds of things. I think a lot of people enjoy that because we always want to see what's new, what's cooking, right? And games take a long fucking time to develop, as well as updates. So when you have your favorite game that you don't want to put down, you're itching for more. This past week has been nuts. You know, a lot of these live service games every 3 months have their cycles, and they're almost all synced up. Fortnite just had their massive, massive update that added Lego Fortnite, like I was mentioning earlier, which isn't even Fortnite. It's like Minecraft. Their Rocket Racing, which I'm going to try, because if it is like Rocket League and it's their version of racing, because they're all under the same company, I'm going to be very intrigued. Rocket League, by the way, folks, is one of my all-time favorite games. I've been playing it for years, and I play it consistently every night. It's actually a game I don't talk a lot about on this, because I don't know why. Honest to God, I have no idea why. I'm pretty sure I've talked about it once or twice. I've mentioned it many times, but I don't know if I've done a full dedicated episode. So I might have to write that down as an idea. It's still all freestyled. I'm just saying as, right down on my agenda to do record a Rocket League podcast. I'll definitely have to do that. But, so that came out. We had the new Rainbow Six Siege update that just came out yesterday or 2 days ago. We have the new COD, the Season 1 of COD Modern Warfare 3 just came out yesterday. Lots of updates. I've been playing Meet Your Maker. I've been currently recording an episode about that I haven't finished because I didn't get far into it. But that'll be coming soon, somewhat, God willing. So, yeah. We just had the BlizzCon with the whole Diablo and World of Warcraft, all that, so that's kind of cool. They mentioned Phil Spencer way too much. I know they were just acquired by Microsoft, but it's like, come on, guys. Don't make it weird. It was odd. What else? That's about it. There's a lot of stuff going on in the gaming world. Keep your ears to the ground and your eyes to the sky, because I think there's a lot of good things to look forward to, and I only hope the best. If you have a dog in the race, if you have a favorite game you're hoping to win, I hope the best for you. I don't really have any, so this year it's actually kind of relaxed. I'm not stressing it. I was really hoping Elden Ring would win last year, and I'm glad it did. I'm curious what will win this year. I'm excited to see the memes, the community, the culture, the announcements, and everything else in the gaming world. So thank you all for listening. I hope you have a great day. If you get to watch the Game Awards tonight, have fun. If you don't, that's okay. If you're listening to this after the fact, well, time capsule, I guess. Fuck it. I'll talk to y'all later. Peace and love.